Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents...
Greetings and welcome to episode 121 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of Disney and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the iconic Disney attraction, the Pirates of the Caribbean. Not only do we talk about some of our favorite memories of the attraction, we also go through the entire ride, scene by scene, and analyze every single aspect of it. We go deep down the rabbit hole on this one, so get ready. But before we get started, I just want to mention that the documentary that myself and our team is hard at work on, Foolish Mortals, a documentary about Haunted Mansion fans, in case you haven't heard of it. Well, we're still working on the film. We've been working on it for about a year now, and the finish line is in sight. But what has transpired since the last episode is that we announced the world premiere date for Foolish Mortals and location, and the tickets are on sale right now. It all goes down Saturday, July 15th. 2017 at the Red Line in Anaheim, California. Of course, we're going to have our world premiere right outside of Disneyland. Where else would we have it? Tickets are on sale right now. This is not to be missed. We're going to have a great time. We're going to have a costume contest. We're going to be screening another short film that we've produced. It's going to be an awesome time. If you go to foolishmortalsdoc.com, that's where you can go to buy the tickets. Alrighty, now let's get to that pirate's fun. So without any further ado, let's begin, matey. Alrighty, I am here with Mr. Adam Leonard. Hello.
Heya.
And I'm also joined by Mr. Ryan Krulik. Hello.
Ahoy.
Ahoy.
Appropriate.
It is appropriate. So, Adam, you know, every time you come on, I always forget what your title is. I should probably write it down on a post-it note or something.
I think it's at this point Admiral of the Creepy Kingdom Navy and sole member of the Creaky Kingdom Hall of Fame. Still waiting for that certificate.
Oh, yes. Sorry, my bad. So Adam joined.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah, it's definitely
yeah,
coming.
Exactly.
Adam joined the Creepy Kingdom Hall of Fame, which he is the sole member, on his first appearance on the show, which was pretty early on in the Creepy Kingdom run. Was that 2014, I believe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow.
Yeah.
We were so young. So innocent.
A lifetime ago.
Yeah, so you earned this title, and we're actually going to be talking about how you earned this title tonight, because it is relevant to our topic at hand here. We are here. We've gathered together because just recently, a few days prior of this recording, was the 50th anniversary of the Pirates of the Caribbean, or Caribbean, depending on... I say Caribbean. I don't know about you guys.
I do as well.
Yes.
All right. So we'll stay with that. Anyways, it opened in Disneyland 50 years ago today. Not today, but last week.
Right.
And we haven't really talked too in-depthly about the attraction, except during your first appearance, Adam. So I figured it was an appropriate time to revisit it. And we're also going to go through the attraction and discuss our favorite creepy parts of it, because it is it's pretty high up there on the creepy factor as far as Disney attractions go. I don't think anyone could debate that.
No, I mean, it's definitely in the upper tier there.
Adam, why don't you just kind of tell us a little bit about your former life, I guess.
So, for those of you who don't know my backstory, didn't see the episode that I started on, back when I was in college, I essentially decided to run away from home and work for Disney for a while. I've been a lifelong fan of Disney, and I went there on a trip to Disneyland on a trip with some of my friends, and it made me kind of think about like what it would be like to work for them. At that point in my life, I was looking for some kind of direction. Mm-hmm. So I joined up with their college program, got shipped out to Florida, worked at Disney World, worked as a pirate at Pirates of the Caribbean for 3 months. So that pretty much makes me an expert, I think.
Right. Definitely.
I worked at Pirates of the Caribbean in Walt Disney World, Magic Kingdom.
3 months. Well, that's 3 months more than I've done it. And I believe that's 3 months more than Ryan's done it. I'm not sure, you know.
Definitely.
Okay.
So I'm interested. So I'm not 100% caught up. Can we get a story? Can we get a story now, or?
Yeah. Like, what do you want to know?
What was the creepiest moment you had while being a pirate at Pirates of the Caribbean?
Creepiest moment I had. Oh, that's, I could generally like, it was pretty spooky because there was a lot of ghost stories involved with the ride. It might've been an urban legend. It probably was an urban legend, but there's an urban legend. Like you've been on Pirates of the Caribbean at, Magic Kingdom, I'm assuming, right, Ryan?
Correct, yeah. Okay,
so there was this urban legend about, you know, like the one drop you take right at the start of the ride. Mm-hmm. There was like this urban legend about like some woman was supposedly killed at the end of at that drop, like another boat fell on her or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so there was like a lot of people saying that you could see like shadows and stuff like that. And so as working Pirates of the Caribbean, oftentimes you'd have to work late into the night. You know, many nights I would work there till like 2-3 in the morning, and depending on like what position you were in when the ride closed, you were sometimes tapped to be the person that took quote unquote the last ride of the night. And so there were times where I would potentially have to go on the ride by myself at like 2-3 in the morning. And so like when you're like at that spot and you're remembering like the stories you've heard, it's already kind of creepy. It's dark, there's like the skeleton like strapped to the wheel and stuff like that right before. So that could be a little bit creepy to go through by yourself.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I haven't heard about that particular urban legend that someone was
supposedly
killed.
Yeah, and it's possible it might have been something that was just invented by the castmates to try to freak each other out and that kind of thing. I mean, that's entirely possible.
Totally worked, though.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then I remember we'd also then take it a step further because Because like the ride, you have the ability for like emergency situations to broadcast like audio into any part, you know, broadcast over the PA into any part of the ride. Mm-hmm. And so like every once in a while we'd try to like screw with each other and start talking while people were on the ride, you know, like each other were on the ride. That was kind of fun.
Like, ooh, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, like, you know, I would say stuff like, we can't wait for you to join us in hell in a spooky voice.
Brutal.
Wow.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah.
There was awesome.
Burn in hell with us.
There was one guy I remember in particular who I believe used the audio at least once or twice to sing parts of Down with the Sickness.
Oh.
Wow. He was like, wah! Over the.
Yeah, exactly. Except he would say it like really dry and like non enthusiastic. He'd just be like, ooh, ah, ah, ah.
Wow. The
nice.
The things that Pirates cast members have to do to break the monotony, huh? So, a tale I believe you told the first time you were on about that that last ride of the night. Was that you have to say goodnight to a certain ghost.
Yeah, I believe, like, and I can't believe I, you know, it's been several years, I believe. His name is George. I will be really embarrassed if that's not his name.
It is George,
but yeah,
yes.
there is a ghost that's believed to inhabit the ride. I believe it was a former employee, I think is the story. And then, yeah, there was kind of a superstition where you had to say goodnight to him each night or else the next night, or the next day, potentially. Ride might not work so well, which, to be honest, is less like a supernatural thing and more that ride was like old as hell and just like broke down all the time.
Oh well, that's what you want to think. But did you was there a time that you didn't say goodnight to George on your last ride out?
I don't think the person taking the ride didn't do it. I think it was like a tower. Like it was the people in the tower who like kind of ran like the big board that did it.
Oh, okay.
And I very rarely close that because like my worst nightmares while working on that ride were having to run that position because there was just so many ways you could screw up.
So you did do that position at some point. Did you feel like you had enough training to do that or?
No. I totally caused an evac at least once.
Really?
When I was doing that position. Because they basically like teach it to you in like part of a day and they're like, all the things can go wrong. You don't want them to go wrong because then you'll get in trouble. Good luck.
Wow.
Wow.
What does in trouble mean?
Like it was like really like a slap on the wrist. Like technically, like I had to like talk to like a manager who simply said, like, I understood what happened, but we don't like the stuff to happen, so don't do it again. I suppose in theory that you could, like, get moved or fired or something if it happened a lot.
This whole last minute and a half of this conversation should be listened to by Disney HR.
That's our... Well, we have some management in the theme parks that are listeners to the show. You know,
let's work on those processes.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even, like I sincerely hope that like you know like Aerosmith, Rock and Roller Coaster, those people get like more training than I got because like I think the stakes are probably a lot higher there.
I'm upside down, yo.
With that launch, yeah, I got to make sure. Was that your Steven Tyler?
That was my best Steven Tyler, actually.
All right, well, you're getting there.
You press the wrong button, like the ride's launched into a wall. I can only imagine.
It needs a little more of that. Upside down! More of that, like, cat noise.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
I've never been on that ride when it's broke, but I really hope they got Steven Tyler to record, like, the out of order, like, audio that they play stuck on it. That would be, like, the best thing ever.
Going down.
This ride is broke down.
Yes, sir. Now we're off the rails.
Yeah, I know. This might be bonus content. Anyway, so back to Pirates. No, I'll leave it in. Everyone enjoys little Aerosmith impersonations.
And if you don't like it, get out.
Yeah, well, you could stay. It's cool. anyways, back to pirates. So you had the evac situation, but actually the thing that got you in the Creepy Hall of Fame, oh, actually it wasn't because of pirates. I just remembered it
not
right now.
Not directly, no.
No, no. So, but I still think it's important to, you know, explain your, how you earned such a prestigious title.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is like literally like the worst day probably of my life, maybe. So
at least you earned a prize.
So like I'm glad I could provide it for people's amusement. So right. It's actually has to do with like orientation day. Like when I first got to Disney College, you have to do this big thing where you like check in and you have to go like a bunch of places. You have to go to like Disney HQ to check in there. And it's like a big long day. And first thing is I came into this day with 1 hour of sleep because I took a flight all the way from Oregon to Florida direct, like an overnight flight. So basically I was flying, getting off the plane, going straight to orientation.
Wow.
This was like back when like Disney was a lot more hardcore about their like facial hair policy. And like I didn't have like a beard or anything like that, but I'd like shaved and it had probably been a couple of days since I had shaved recently. And so I arrive in a check-in and quickly get pulled aside and told that that I had too much facial stubble and that I needed to shave in order to have my like cast ID taken because they're so like hardcore that I couldn't even get like my ID picture taken if I didn't look up to code for them.
Wow.
So they proceed to hand me like the cheapest razor. I'm sure it was like a 20-cent razor and some shaving cream. And I proceeded to go into the bathroom to shave and I managed to cut myself shaving because I had like kind of like a dimple or mole or some like little bump on like my lip. And I proceed to like bleed for like hours straight.
Oh my god!
After about the first 15 minutes, like I eventually see like some kind of management cast member in there, and I'm like, "Hey, I cut myself, and I can't stop bleeding." And they're like, "It'll be fine. Just put some tissue on it. It'll stop eventually." I'm in the bathroom for probably half an hour, 45 minutes. I'm still bleeding.
Wow.
So basically I have to come out and like now I've got like a big like wad of bloody like tissue on my face and I have to go wander over to somebody and be like, "Hey, I cut myself. I can't stop bleeding." And so eventually they have to send me to like another place because we were on like one of their housing campuses. And so I had to trudge like over to like the main office with all this bloody stuff, surrounded by a bunch of people that I don't know. Like these like just every like a bunch of people, like, you know, hundreds of people were showing up that day. And I'm already really nervous about meeting new people in the first place. And so now I'm like the guy who's like sitting there bleeding all over the place and I have to do the walk of the shame all the way to the office to get bandages, which don't work because I just bleed through the bandages.
Wow.
Eventually, they're completely perplexed as what to do. So they're like, "We'll just like send him on his way and let him go take the tours and stuff." So now I'm stuck like, on a tour, and this person's trying to go about their business, like, you know, talking to us, taking us around. And they have to do it and try to act nonchalant while there's this dude like bleeding out in their tour group.
Wow.
And then on top of that, then I have to like then go and finally get to my housing, which I went super late because I showed up with my roommate. But at that point, my roommate had just moved on at that point because he's like, "Well, OK, I'm going to get checked in and I'm going to get to our place and all that stuff." And so I'm like running behind like all of my roommates. And so I had to go and show up and meet my other roommates for the first time. Well, once again, looking like some kind of like escaped convict.
So that all their first impressions were just bleeding bandages.
And if that wasn't bad enough, once again I returned to the fact that I had like 1 hour of sleep the night before, and so like I was like not functioning like whatsoever at that point. I was just completely crazy and kind of irrational, and I was like really freaking out because I'm like, "Okay, so am I actually going to be able to cut it here? Because I can't even get through like the first day of orientation without this being a freaking disaster. I can't wait to see what's next."
Well, after revisiting that story, I can say I don't think that any guest has come on the show since your first appearance that can match that story. So you definitely still have the title, you know, being the sole member of the Creepy Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that really sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I would think Disney would give you whatever the equivalent to the Purple Heart would be in Mouse World.
I don't know what that is, but you earned it. And
I agree. I'm giving you an honorary one right now.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it, Ryan.
Yeah. Poor guy.
So.
But you live to tell the tale, and you, so you were you worked there for 6 months.
Three or four.
Oh, I didn't think it was longer. Did you work at another attraction?
Nope, I just did the one. I mean, like, the thing is, like, what I came away from it was, is I enjoyed my time there. I really think working for Disney is what you kind of make of it. Doing their college program is kind of what you make of it. I had a blast, went to the parks a whole bunch.
You had a good time with the internship, but in the end, you just opted out.
Yeah, I think, like, I would not be opposed for working for them again. I just think I think you'd have to find a position that you could actually live off of, and I don't know how I could have lived off of what I was making there. Maybe the full-time employees were making a little bit more, but not by much. And so it felt like the people I knew who were making it viable were people who were just, like, working, like, all the overtime, and they were working, like, 60 hours a week every week, and that was just their life. And that's, like, I don't know, that's, like, to me, that's just not, like, any kind of life to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, there's people that's what they want to do, and they're up for it. And there's people that are not, you know. So, and I guess they want to bank off the fact that there's people out there that are willing to do that just to feel like they're part of the
just
team.
To be a part of the magic.
I was trying to think of something besides the magic, but I couldn't think.
Well, that's what it is at that point.
I mean, the cult is real, and I mean, I'm kind of part of that cult. I'm an appreciator of that cult, but yeah, I mean, definitely Disney, you know, and the theme park industry in general really do have this kind of effect on people where they become so enamored of it that they're willing to endure all types of hardships to be, you know, inside that kind of bubble.
Well, here's something. So clearly, you said you were a huge Disney fan. You went to Disneyland. Experienced that before going to Walt Disney World to work there for the first time. You hadn't gone to Walt Disney World before that point, right?
I had actually once, but only once when I was a kid.
Okay, but you know, but I guess that's relevant. The point I'm getting at is that, you know, but you were a Disney fan going into it, but you had to, you know, live behind the curtain. You know, you didn't just peek; you were behind it. You know, And how did that affect the magic, quote unquote? Because you know, I've unintentionally seen, you know, backstage pictures of pirates, and I just try to block it out, you know, as a bad memory. I'm like, I don't want to see these half animatronics poking over the side. I'm like, you know, how was that like seeing how it all like worked?
You know, I don't think it ruined it for me. I think if anything else, it just kind of felt like privilege for getting to see this other side of it, because. You know, like, I have enough interest in Disney, and particularly the theme parks. I mean, that's kind of really where I'm at. I'm not, like, the biggest Disney movie person. Like I said, the theme parks have always kind of continued to be my draw into it. And so I think I had enough interest that I was interested in all aspects of it. So it's cool to, like, have gone in, like, the Utilidors, or to say that, you know, I've walked around the back scenes of Pirates of the Caribbean. And for me personally, I don't feel like it's in any way, shape, or form affected my appreciation for, like, that ride in particular. If nothing else, it's only, you know, cause that to magnify, because I feel like a deeper connection and slight ownership of it.
Interesting. And my other aspect of this too is that there's been times that I've considered, like, oh, maybe I should get, like, a, you know, like a part-time job at Disneyland. And then I'm like, I never want that feeling of, like, oh, I gotta go to work, and I'm just like, I'm tired, I don't want to do this. I never want to feel that going to Disneyland. You know, like, and that was like, so even for like a month, I feel like the combination of peeking behind the curtain and having to work would you know, it would affect me in a negative way. That's just me personally.
Yeah, that it was on balance, though, because while there was work, there was also play, too, because it was, while, I mean, like, there were times that the work could be a little bit grueling, the fact that on, like, my days off, I had pretty much unrestricted access to Disney, that was pretty cool.
Could you go backstage when you weren't working?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I could. I probably wouldn't have tried to do it in a park I wasn't familiar with, because that seems like that could be a problematic. But yeah, there's nothing to like. There would have been nothing in theory to keep me from like just walking in through the utilidors on my day off. And I mean, like, I don't think you're really. They don't really want you doing that, but the utilidors was like a really large place, and as long as you were walking around like with purpose, like you knew what you were doing, it was highly unlikely anybody was going to stop you.
Those utilidors. that's the tale that's been woven. As long as you walk around like you know what you're doing, no one's going to ask you, what are you doing?
I mean, I can only imagine they probably want you to like actually go in and you actually swipe your pass proper and all that stuff. Because I'm sure they probably record how many of like employees use the parks at any given time. I'm sure that's relevant to them somehow. But really, like I said, it would be, you know, the chances of anything coming of you entering backstage are very slight.
Well, there's a little taste of Adam's. Past. If you want the full story, you're going to have to go back to that episode. I guess I should probably know what number that is. I'll put it in the show notes. I'll figure it out later.
Just to make it, James cut it out, Roach Boats.
Roach Boats? Yeah, the Roach Boat story. That's another time. So, Ryan, have you ever been on this ride before?
You know, I thought it was weird that you asked me to be on this podcast. I've never been to Disneyland before. Or Disney World. I have no idea. Yes, I have. Once or twice.
What is it that draws you to keep going on the attraction after all these years?
Pirates is really one of the best, you know, rides I've ever been on, just in any theme park anywhere ever. The design is classic, the music is really great, the overall, you know, the overall focus of the ride is right up my alley. It's dark, it's a water ride, it's got just really cool composition of lighting and all the kind of stuff that I'm into. So it's always been right up there with the Haunted Mansion for me as, you know, favorite rides.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, when people ask about, you know, what's your favorite attractions or if there's a list, the list starts with Haunted Mansion and Pirates and then we'll take it from there.
No, I agree. I mean, it's the same way for me.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they are by far, like, in my opinion, like, the most iconic rides. And I would even have, like, real difficult separating one from the other because I feel like they're just so – both so important to, like, the initial Disney experience.
Yeah, for me, Pirates of the Caribbean is a close second. The Haunted Mansion is is where the heart is. But it's definitely close second. And I think, you know, that goes back to the first time I rode it and just being – you know, not knowing the drop was coming and, you know, really just kind of getting into that big scene, you know, with the ship, which I know we're going to go through the components of the ride. But just those couple of elements right there, you know, were real big shockers for me. And I was mind blown.
How old were you?
Oh, young. I was maybe 6, wow. 7.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure my first ride was at – my first ride was at Disneyland. And I often think the first Disney park I ever went to was Magic Kingdom when I was 9. And I think back on that trip, and there's certain things that stick out that were really left a huge impression on me. And then I think about – I'm trying to remember, like – I'm sorry. I remember going on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and I remember going on Journey to the Imagination in Epcot, and other than that I really don't remember anything. And the more I think about it, I was like, I don't think that my parents took me on the Haunted Mansion. I have no memory of that. I didn't go on Pirates in Magic Kingdom. I have no memory of that. I'm like, what did we do? We just went on like 2 rides? So the first time I remember any of this stuff was going to Disneyland maybe like 2 years after that. And I'm actually really glad that my first experiences of Haunted Mansion and Pirates was at Disneyland. Because it's hard to not talk about Haunted Mansion. I do it 80% of my day these days, but so I'll try to stop. But on the subject of Pirates, it was just kind of like, and probably what you were feeling, Ryan, what you were describing at six, like there was like no context for what you're experiencing.
Yeah, I grew up in Texas next to a Six Flags theme park, which isn't small and had a lot of rides and a lot of things going on. But there was just nothing I had experienced ever in my life that was remotely close to that. It was just so produced and, you know, it sticks out. It sticks out.
Yeah, I'll kind of echo what you guys are saying because, like, my story is very similar to yours. It was like my second trip to Disneyland. I went once when I was like really, really young, so I can't remember it. But I was probably right around the ages you guys were saying, somewhere like six, seven, eight. And I remember, like, it's kind of like a little back information about myself as a kid, is I was always really, really fascinated with like supernatural stuff, much like I still am today. But at the same time, I'm also really, really skittish about that stuff. And for the longest time, I would be like really like frightened by anything that might be scary and not wanting to do it. And so I remember when my parents took me, like my dad basically said, okay, if we're going to Disneyland, you're going to go on like all the rides. Like, wow. We're not holding back. You're going to go on everything, which I'm really happy he did because I think it set a really huge impression. And I learned, you know, that the stuff was far cooler than I think I thought at that time. And so nice. It kind of, I think, was like the entry portal into like my obsession with like horror themed like attractions and stuff to this day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And like I remember the parts that stick out to me most about Pirates of the Caribbean were right at the very beginning. Like I remember the freaking talking skull and crossbones.
Yeah.
Because that was like at like eight, that was just like really, really creepy. I mean, less creepy now, but when I was a kid, that would like had a huge impression. I mean, that followed by like the drop right afterwards. And then kind of as you wind your way through like that kind of abandoned pirate colony with like all the skeletons, like that, those are the things above all else in that attraction that just kind of etched themselves into my mind the first time I went on it.
Yeah. And in consequent rides, you know, you start to pick up on all that dialogue and stuff like, it'd be too late to alter course, mateys. You know, like, it's like, right. It's just so cool. It's like, wow, this is awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and with that, yeah, there's so much to take in that there's so much rewritability to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of dimension. And that's the same thing with, again, we're talking about Haunted Mansion, but it's the same thing with those two rides. They're both so produced that you catch things everywhere. The details are innumerable. And you're always finding something cool.
And the thing about it, the other thing I was thinking about too here is it's kind of crazy. It's like this ride's 50 years old, and with minimal changes. I mean, there you know there's little updates here and there, and which will of course we can discuss. But the bones, no pun intended, of the ride are still intact. And we're talking about a 15-minute experience,
right?
Animatronic extravaganza. And I'm thinking, which when it opened was not based on any intellectual property.
Mm-hmm. Like, just Mark Davis.
Yep. And I'm sitting there and I was thinking, I'm like, I could never imagine Disney opening attraction like that today.
It would be a stretch for them now. I hate to say it, but I think something that original and out of the box that's not from a branded IP that already exists, right. You know, that's already in their portfolio, I think it'd be unlikely.
I think the only thing on scale, like as far as like spectacle and probably in cost, I don't know, that they've built as of recent is probably Radiator Springs Racers. Of course, based on an IP, but as far as that kind of like wow, you know,
it has the wow factor, but it's not the same. It's not the same storytelling level, and I know we're probably not going to get too deep into history, but that was really the last ride that Walt had a big hand on,
right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a valid statement to make here, and I think it has his touch.
I think, and just to kind of throw out things where we're talking about why it's relevant. I just think, much like the Haunted Mansion, there's just like a timeless quality to it. It's like you go on it now, you can go on it 20 years from now, and it doesn't feel, I mean, aged, I guess is probably in my opinion. I think there's just
dated.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
that is pretty remarkable that it's not, it doesn't feel dated. I mean, even, you know, as I said, there's been changes and enhancements, but the core of the ride is still there. And I mean, it seems like a new experience every time you go through it.
So should we take the stroll through it and then
let's pick out
our different things?
So we're gonna talk about Disneyland's. It is Disneyland's anniversary here, of course. I think it goes without saying, you know, no disrespect to you, Adam, but Disneyland's Pirates is the far superior version of the attraction.
Not in the contest.
I will say this. If we have listeners that have not been to Disneyland and have not ridden Disneyland's Pirates and have only been to Walt Disney World, I'm going to say don't, like, turn this off. I'm going to be that bold. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to rob you of that experience of thinking that you know Pirates of the Caribbean and then getting on Disneyland's.
Okay. Can I give one due to the Orlando version?
All right, I have one as well, actually, if I was going to bring up, but you can give one, yes.
The queue is without question superior.
It is.
Yeah, the queue is awesome.
And the parrots outside. Mm-hmm.
That wasn't my one thing, but I will give you the cue. The cue is my one thing about the Florida version, which probably wasn't there when you were there, is the mermaids that are in the beginning.
Yeah, that was after I was there.
And for people, the Disneyland people that haven't experienced it or don't know about it, they inserted this. It's such a random thing they did, but it was based off the mermaids that were in the last Pirates movie. And it's in the beginning of the ride where everything's going slow, and it is actually, I love it so much. It is one of the creepiest things. It's just this subtle splash and projections. It's not like a real flashy, hey, look at me. It kind of is really unsettling. You're like, wait, did something just splash next to me in the water? Like, it feels like right before the attack happens of killer mermaids, I guess. And I absolutely love it. I don't always see them every time I ride. Maybe it's not always working. I have heard a tale that somebody's saw what was supposed to be the mermaid projection, but it was a Windows error screen projected into the water.
Nice. it's the blue screen of death. Avast. Abandoned ship.
Okay, quick sidestep. I can't say that I ever saw that, but I definitely had that happen to me on Expedition Everest.
Oh, when there's like a projection of the Yeti after you,
yep,
go backwards.
I definitely saw that broke in like an error screen just sitting there projected awkwardly on the wall while I was sitting there.
That is every AV or production person's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels so bad. You're just like, oh, some people will be mad at a bad show or whatever, but there's one person that's going to catch hell for that. You know,
like, somebody's going to have a case of the Mondays.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, I'm going to give it. Oh, they also have the mermaid skeleton laying on the side there. So I'm a huge mermaid fan. So I love mermaids, and especially not necessarily the cutesy mermaids, but, you know, the killer sirens that lure, trap men and then kill them, which those were the mermaids that were in the film. So
the hybridization of the film with the ride is something I guess we can talk about as we float through,
for sure. Well, let's just talk that, you know, we haven't even got started yet, but let's we can talk about that right now as it comes up, because because my thoughts on it are, you know, the film was so huge, the first one in 2003, that it just really seemed inevitable that they had to incorporate it. Like, it would have seemed odd if they just would have pretended like these two realities were separate. So that's always been kind of my take on it. So I don't really mind the characters being put into the attraction. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Adam?
I can't say that it really bothers me all that much, other than maybe like it's a little bit jarring to see like these, you know, 50-year-old animatronics, which still look great, and like I said, I still uphold timeless, next to or intercut with a more sophisticated one that looks like a dead ringer of friggin' Johnny Depp. Because I think that the original Pirates animatronics were kind of not supposed to be like super realistic. I mean, they were kind of like broader caricatures of humans,
right?
Rather than like this is supposed to look like a human. However, the Johnny Depp one is supposed to look like a very specific human.
I could see that. Yeah, for me, I think it's great because a lot like how Star Wars, the new films, expose a new generation to an older mythos or, you know, story realm. I mean, I'm fine with it. My 11-year-old daughter, you know, goes through Pirates and she's like, oh man. And, you know, and she loves Johnny Depp and she loves the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. So she sees him and she keys into it. And I think that there's value there. But yeah, it's interesting how they've done it, you know, like, you know, Davy Jones and the projection mist and, you know, those couple of tie-ins that they made, I liked them.
I don't think it's overreaching. It's not like they took like every single animatronic and just had like an entire ride of Johnny Depp's or anything.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's like I said, the bones of the ride are still there.
Right. Yeah, it's minor. It's minor. Mm-hmm. I feel like.
But it's enough that for people like your daughter or anyone that may have never been on the attraction before seeing the movie, they feel like they're getting that experience enough. They're not like recreating scenes from the movie, but they're like, oh, okay, there's Johnny Depp. I'm happy. You know, like, you know, for the average park guest.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a level of scrutiny where you can kind of start flashing your little red nerd alert light, because it's like what you look at and what I look at, and I guess what we look at and people who have our interest, you know, in this, is going to be significantly different from that average park guest. You know, they're not going to look as deeply into it or as critically. So I think for most people, it probably works really well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wonder what the future holds for what they're going to add to it, or what changes they're going to make based on the new films, or
the new film looks amazing. And if they can, you know, and what they're doing in Shanghai, which we're not talking about really, but
we are,
you know,
not.
Like if and like what they're doing with that story right now, if they started to integrate some of that stuff in, I would imagine it would be largely projection mapping based, right. Or some sort of LED video wall stuff, or different types of things that, you know, could be very cool and could go the other way, because Disneyland's Pirates, it has that nostalgic quality, and I think you could easily ruin that.
Right, and some people feel that they have. But
I think it's still, I wouldn't there. Go that far yet. Yeah, yeah, no. I think it's tasteful.
I think that they, like, you know, I'm willing to have some faith that they kind of know that Pirates is one of the handful of attractions that they can't mess with too much.
I don't know. That's a common thing that people say, you know, I hear it on podcasts. It was like, they would never do X, Y, and Z. Never say never.
Ever.
Okay, let me rephrase it, that I would deeply hope that they would resist the temptation to mess with that. Right. Right.
I mean, you know, I agree with you, but, you know, it could be argued to say, I would never in a million years think that there would be animated cartoon hitchhiking ghost in a haunted mansion that they have at Magic Kingdom.
Well, and I, as I'll say with like a deep sigh too, that I suppose I also need to realize that we really intense, you know, fans who appreciate the history and all that stuff, unfortunately, are not necessarily the people that they're most concerned with pleasing, because you know they're always trying to sell their, you know, their product to a new generation. And
you betcha.
Yeah.
And Jack Sparrow in the Pirates of the Caribbean probably puts, you know, people in seats at films, you know, just subconsciously. So you can't blame them for it. It's just how do they go about doing it?
No, yeah.
It's business.
Yeah, I'm sure. And again, I'm sure there's, I know the people that work in Imagineering, they're the nerds. Like they grew up, like they're like us, right? So they're right. It's they're dealing that battle with the number crunchers, and you know, and so, you know, there's people fighting the good fight. I know that. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I do know that. There's so many times I was like, oh, they would never do that. It would like, it's like Tower Terror. That's gonna be here forever. Why would they close that? You know, I would just all these things like that. And what I've thought about this past year, it was like, you know, they're building Star Wars land in the back of Frontierland. Like I would have lost money on that bet if somebody had right. said that 5 years ago. you know, so at this point, I'm like, I mean, I'm sure that they won't change it to Pirates to that degree, but you never know. I do know that if they did some major changes to Pirates in Disneyland, that my
they'd be pushback.
Yeah, the world that I live in would be an intense one. Like,
but James, didn't you know that they're gonna be like rebranding Pirates of the Caribbean to like be like Jake and the Pirates?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be perfect because apparently Jake and the Pirates teaches that pirates don't steal. That's something I saw somewhere. Some
good
meme.
Pirates don't steal.
Is that what it is? Yeah, good pirates don't steal. That's what it says.
I have no idea. I just made that up. But that's
no. That's actually what it says. Actually, yeah, I thought you
good
saw what I saw.
Don't steal.
Yep.
I'm available under contract if they're looking for a writer. But, you know, I think it's misinformation, folks. Pirates do steal.
Yeah, it was some meme I saw that says apparently they don't know what a pirate is, or so that's where I saw it. I haven't checked out the show myself yet. It looks incredible.
That's actually one of the dynamics of that ride that is really interesting to me, is how playful and how, and again, back to Haunted Mansion and these two dark rides taking these more serious concepts and giving them this fun, friendly spin, even as they're auctioning off human beings. There's like this like jovial nature to it all. I think a lot of that has to do with the music and Davis's art and the caricatures of people so that it doesn't have that photorealism. But yeah, pirates weren't nice people. Like pirates were bad guys a lot right. of the time. And they pull it off like really well with this.
It should also be worth noting that like a peppy theme song will also go a long way in helping that along.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the music, yeah. man. The music sells yeah. it. 100%. 100%. Because it can totally go the other way.
That's one thing. Actually, I was thinking about that today. Full disclosure, in preparation for the show tonight, I decided I'd it was my responsibility to go to Disneyland and ride Pirates so that I was right up to date with everything. And while I was riding, I was sitting there thinking about the dialogue. And a lot of it has changed because some of the lines are a little too offensive for today's audience that were originally there. But the thing that I was thinking about was that this is a celebration of horrible people.
That's fair.
It really is. It really is. And it romanticizes it and makes it like super kid friendly. And I've always thought that about that, right?
But my take on it is that are we really happy about what's going on here? Is that why we like the ride? Or is it a release from reality to where you're like, now any, because the thing about pirate lifestyle is that kind of anything goes, you know, like I don't have these restraints.
They're not going to work on Monday morning.
No, right. So is that the connection, or are we celebrating the bad guys like we like the Disney villain show, or like, you know?
Think that's subjective.
I think that's actually really interesting, because I've never heard somebody kind of ask that question before, James. And I guess for me, like, if I were to try to reach out and come up with a base answer, a part of me just wonders if it's so much tied to the fact, at least for me, as with I would say a majority of people that have gone on the ride, as we were kind of indoctrinated on it as children.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, as an 8-year-old, you're not thinking about those deeper themes. You're tied to, like, you know, you're tied to, like, kind of like the wacky antics that are going on, like, you know, the Peppy theme song, everything we were just talking about. And so then it becomes, like, so ingrained in nostalgia that, you know, I guess I just don't kind of question it.
Hmm. The lines blur just because it's pure nostalgia.
Right.
So what about the person who, you know, flies in from Ohio and goes to ride Pirates of the Caribbean and comes out loving it at age 35. I think that it's totally subjective. And for me personally, I love villains. I love horror. I love pirates. I'm all for it. Like rock and roll. I always noticed it because it was so, you could just tell it was like watered down, you know, but it was fun and safe. And it was and then as you get older and you start to learn what pirates are really about, you know, and how that time period was, it was incredibly violent, you know, and really, you know, not family friendly material for Disney to cover. But I don't know if it's a certain perception that you could cut across a broad spectrum of people. You know, I think it's going to be subjective.
You know, I think though, I mean, even beyond Pirates of the Caribbean, I think you're absolutely right in reality that pirates were horrible people who did horrible things. Even beyond just Pirates of the Caribbean, I think that we, as a culture, have this kind of romantic notion about the pirate.
Sure.
And I think it speaks to like this concept of freedom and being able to do what you want to do and as we've kind of said, not following that normal path.
Yeah.
And so I think there is this larger like there's this romanticization of pirates.
No, that's true. That that strips it down. It's not necessarily that pirates were bad. It's that we romanticize pirates. Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah, and the ride is the biggest example of that.
For sure.
And probably has been in the past 50 years one of the biggest things leading that romance. Right? I mean, carrying on with the films, you know.
That's interesting. What impact did it have culturally on the perception of the pirate? Wow.
Well, now we have Jake and the Neverland Pirates. I mean, we're pirate, yeah. Good pirate doesn't steal.
And I would think it's very specifically they did what they did with it. I can't imagine that had they gone with the other idea they were thinking of, that pirate wax museum. I don't even
the
know
walk
if that
through.
Yeah, I don't even know if that would have been there still today.
Probably not.
No, probably not. But that's interesting. I like the idea of the question, what impact did the attraction end up having on the cultural perception of pirates. That's pretty heavy. That's interesting. No, the wax museum, the walkthrough wouldn't have had that.
No, not so, not at all.
I mean, essentially, it probably would have had the scare factor. Like these are some creepy bad guys.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure they would look cool. Mark Davis, I'm sure, would have made the design them as well.
I would have seen it as more of like a historical thing, you know, where they went in and got real with, you know, the nature of piracy back in those days, as close as they could go. But I think that this, our lucky stars, you know, should be thanked because we got, you know, this cool ride.
Right.
All righty. Well, let's go on the ride.
Yes.
Let's splash down. One of the first things that grabs me is how calm the beginning of this ride is. It's so unsettling Because your
banjo is getting plucked.
Yeah, fireflies, rich people eating.
Okay, let's talk about Blue Bayou. Don't break it down to rich people. Don't be classist. Here's the thing. So I'm eating at Blue Bayou.
I eat there too. I'm not
okay,
rich.
Good.
I'm just saying my thoughts were when I was writing it. When I went to Disneyland with my parents, I was like, "Oh, that's so awesome! We get to eat at Blue Bayou." When I went there without myself, I was like, "I'm the have-nots."
Listen to this. So I get on it, I went to Blue Bayou to eat, and I'm in the restaurant, and they said, "Where do you want to sit?" So I sit by the water, and so my wife and my daughter and I are sitting there by the water, and this group of I think maybe high school or college kids. They're on the boat and they're heading past Blue Bayou and it's, you know, dead silence. And it was really pretty quiet in the restaurant too. But as they go by, they put their hands up in that Hunger Games hand sign. I was just like, wow, that happened. So yeah, that dynamic does exist, you know, and I think people play with that and having the restaurant, you know, in the center of the ride, or at least in the beginning, is pretty cool. You know, that's a pretty nifty idea. And it definitely has a whole lot of heart right there at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, you're right away. You're like, oh, cause you know, we said the queue is pretty much nothing. It's not really themed to anything, but right away, as soon as you go down that out of the loading area, you're immediately in a real place. You feel like it's lived in. There's real people eating to your right, and you're. It's almost like you went through a vortex right away. So it's I love how relaxing and slow the boat's moving as it makes its way down to the drop. That's one of the things I was thinking about today when I was writing it. I was really channeling back to my first time on the ride and just, or not even, for, I don't remember if it was my first, but just, I remembered it as a kid and just knowing what was coming and having that anticipation build for the drop and where we were going and the fact that so many rides, particularly the dark rides in Fantasyland, they're so short and they're just immediately throw you into the action and that. This experience is not like that at all. It's like, this is such a grand experience that we don't have to throw you in right away. We're going to build it up.
there's a story. There's a narrative.
Yeah.
It's part of what makes it like, you know, like the what's to come kind of creepy too. And it's part of the reason it's superior to the one at Orlando, because the Orlando one kind of puts you in it a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, with anything, I think any good horror tale, or like my favorite horror or creepy stories, is that there's this period of like normalcy or kind of like sense of mundane before like the weird stuff starts to happen.
Exactly.
This ride, much like Haunted Mansion, you know, Haunted Mansion is going to keep on getting brought up, but you know, the ghosts don't just start like right up in your face. You build towards that.
Right. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons, Mansion definitely builds up to that. Like, and then it builds up to a fever pitch and smacks you in the face. And, arguably, Pirates does the same thing, but we're not quite to that scene yet. So, and then of course we encounter right before the drop, we have the talking skull.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right away. We're like, well, there's a nice quiet boat ride by the bayou, and all of a sudden, this is the real portal. You know, like now we're leaving your time.
You come seek an adventure with salty old pirates, eh?
And I think that is one of the best transitions from, like, your world to another world.
There's a talking skeleton. S just got real.
Yep. You know, and the anticipation of the people doing the drop before you and hearing the screams.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like and right before that, it's so dark. It's just like, I think of this ride as like several attractions in one, you know, and that that's like one attraction, the dark bayou run into the skull, right? You know, like, it gives you enough time to adjust, you know, to the darkness, gather your bearings.
I'd like to think the first part is kind of like Disney's Deliverance Dark Ride.
There's a banjo. I mean,
there is. And a shack.
And I think it might even be playing notes from Dueling Banjos.
Yeah, it may very well be.
It sounds like the royalty free version.
That's a deep cut.
Yep. I know. And even the guy that's on the porch that's lifeless there. That guy's kind of creepy. I forgot to give a shout out to him.
and my daughter, there's a crocodile in the water, and my daughter is, I was asking her. I was like, "What is your favorite part of Pirates of the Caribbean?" She said, "I can tell you, I don't like that crocodile or that alligator." And I'm always wondering if he's real, and I'm like, "You're 11. He's not real."
I thought you were gonna say you're 11. Everything's real. I thought you were gonna go the other way.
No. It's we read Nietzsche in this house. Okay. I guess that scene has multiple layers. You know, like we're not even talking about. You know, I mean, and that speaks to just how effective it is.
As opposed to Orlando, where if you see like an alligator in the water, you might have to be a little concerned because it could be real.
Especially as a child.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, I didn't even mean to take it there. Wow.
Yeah, no. We're getting let's steer the ship back on course. So we take our first drop in complete darkness. So that you're on to the next ride where all of a sudden this slow moving ride becomes a thrill ride. What thrill rides were at Disneyland when this ride opened? I don't think there were any. Well, no, Matterhorn. Matterhorn was open. So I think that's it. that's pretty incredible. I mean, I'm just trying to think of the people that went on this, the first year of operation. They're just like, well, one thing I will say that we're not about things in the early days is that before the internet, Disney would constantly be promoting their new attractions on the Disneyland TV show or the Wonderful World of Disney or whatever was on at the time. So you would see so much of the attraction before you actually went to ride it because they were trying to sell it to you. They weren't letting you experience it firsthand. So a lot of people probably had a pretty strong feeling of what to expect because I there's so much footage of all the Pirates animatronics on all those old shows that they're just kind of giving it all away.
You remember like in the 80s and 90s where they do like whole like not even just like Wonderful World of Disney, but they do like TV specials when they had like a new thing coming out.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because like I recently rewatched like they had Ernest, like you remember Ernest, right? Like Splash Mountain.
Yeah, I know the Splash Mountain, everyone. Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that when that was awesome. On, and I feel like I watched it at some point in the past few years on YouTube.
Yeah, I just rewatched it probably in the last year. So it was kind of great.
Come on, Vern.
Some of those are cringeworthy. There was like a Splash Mountain rap song or something.
Oh, that's just wrong.
Yeah, there was something.
So many levels.
Yeah, no. but anyways, we go out into this. We get our first taste, and one thing I've noticed, is right after you do that first drop, you start hearing that they immediately start playing, Yo-Ho. Mm. And again, which is, what are you gonna say?
I was gonna say, I mean, that's an amazing song. Like, literally one of the best Disney songs ever.
Yes, no, absolutely.
It's an incredible song. No, I'm not discussing the merit of the song. But I feel like that's a very new thing to have the music right after the first drop because you haven't even entered the main room yet. Mm. And I'm not sure of the decision. It's something that I've been like, again, when I rode the ride today, I was really trying to take it all in and notice everything. And I guess I just never really thought about it for like the past how many years that it's been there. I don't know when that started being there. I have to imagine that could not have always been the case because it just seems like it's not, it's just really out of place right there to me. And especially as far as the story goes, where would that music even be coming from? You're entering the you're about to enter the the cavern, where you're about to see treasure and people that didn't make it. Like, nobody's singing. Yeah.
I think it's an adrenal stimulator. You know, like you hit the fall, and you just had an adrenal stimulation, and then this music comes in and just heightens that. So, I mean, from a psychological standpoint, when you're, giving people an experience, absence of, then something, it's just like dynamics in music. You know, there's an absence of sound, and then boom, the song, and you're like, yeah, and it's an awesome song. So it works really well.
Yeah, and I also, wonder if some of it has to maybe do with, ride design. Because obviously this ride is not just for adults. This ride is for kids of all ages. So I wonder if they try to, walk that tightrope of wanting to be creepy but not too creepy. And sure. So, you've gone through some creepy stuff and some kind of exciting stuff. And you're about to go through, this cavern of skeletons. I wonder if maybe the use of the music is to underlie the fact that there's nothing to be worried about, I guess.
It's a great point. Keeps it upbeat, keeps it fun.
Yeah, you're right, because I'd say it's for wanting it to be creepy. it's pretty creepy to go down that and then to go through that area where there's no music, and right when you do that corner, that's where the skeleton pirates steering the ship, and it's all really dark and intimidating. And maybe that's just a little break of it's all fun.
Don't freak out, kids.
Yeah. if I had to guess, that probably came in when they added the Johnny Depp and all that stuff. Because I don't know for sure. I just don't feel like it. Just doesn't.
I don't remember it.
It doesn't feel like an old school decision. And again, the reason that we have to take this long journey down all these drops and all these things are because we are being taken outside of the park, out of the perimeter of the park. Those are the logistics of it, but. I'm glad that this happened, because if we would have just started in the main room, the anticipation wouldn't have been there.
Sure.
So that was a good point. Happy accident. So moving along, as we go through this cavern and we pass by all this gold and all this treasure and skeletons of people that did not make it, they died with their treasure. This seemed like, I think logistically this room was filler, but it to me it's such an incredible area.
Absolutely.
It's glaringly absent from the Magic Kingdom version. That proves my theory that it was probably filler just to get you to the showroom, to the big room.
What's your favorite sort of scene within that section of the ride?
My favorite thing in there by far is the piece of art titled A Portrait of Things to Come, which another glaring thing absent from Disney World's version. They should have figured out some place to put that in there, because that is an incredible piece of art that Mark Davis did. And it's a pirate lady topless, might I add, with her hair covering her chest. That was a bold choice. That I'm surprised that made it into the 60s Disneyland attraction.
Pirates enjoyed the ladies.
But in eating fruit and riches, and it's kind of like the symbolism of that is so strong and intense, because it's kind of like a mirage. it's kind of like this is what we're fighting for, guys. And even if you're not seeking a lady, no matter what your quest is,
right?
So it's kind of, so that's one way to look at it. Other way, it's like the fact that it's called A Portrait of Things to Come, it could be hope. You're, and it's funny that that is surrounded by all these dead people, you know, all these skeletons
sitting on their mountains of gold, yeah, waiting for the Scarlet Woman. Yeah,
you know,
no, like, that's really true. It could very well be.
You know, it's something that, you know, most people never, you know, you're like, oh, look at that, but that is especially as I've grown older, I've grown to absolutely love it. I read this fan theory once that that the redhead in The Auctioneer is that's actually a painting of her, and that
makes sense,
and that she has. Like, she is one. Like, she killed all the pirates that had captured her, and that, you know, and that's the portrait of things to come. So I mean, and what's great is that if we could sit here and come up with four or five other theories, just based on this.
Yeah,
that's one thing.
Well, there could definitely be a tie there. I've never heard that. That's interesting. I think my favorite part of that, I do enjoy the painting, but I think my favorite part, just as a musician, that always stuck out was the kind of like detuned harpsichord that plays itself, and it plays the theme. I always liked that. I always liked the music right there.
Now, with my eyes on it, I'm looking at it as a ghost is playing it. I've always think like, well, how does that work?
Yeah, you know, I never put two and two together on it, but you know, it just having it there, it's definitely like a haunted type of feel. I mean, obviously everybody's dead,
right?
So,
right.
But the music was really cool, and just seeing that playing itself, just it gave it. I guess because everything else was static, it was moving.
Right.
That was I think what stuck out probably, but and the fact that I love harpsichords. But it was definitely, which is a weird thing to say, I know, but I loved it. It was cool.
Is that a bumper sticker you have in your car?
No. I'm gonna get it made though.
All right, good. We also have to mention that there's an urban legend, this is actually true, that on the headboard one of the dead pirates is on, that there is a skull that is indeed a human skull.
Yep.
The backstory on that is that when they were making the attraction, they went to a school that had a real skeleton and got it from there for to save money instead of making it. I don't know all that.
That's what I heard. I heard that it was because using remains was cheaper than fabricating them.
Huh. So that's an interesting twist there. But
I mean, the one elephant in the room that we didn't even discuss was the urban legend about Walt being stored beneath Pirates of the Caribbean.
I never heard that before. What? Like what? In the treasure room? They're supposed to be like Walt's
bodies in there. No. I don't know specifics, but I've heard that before.
Oh.
That's one of those urban legends. But no, the skull is definitely real. That's not really an urban legend, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, an urban legend doesn't mean that it's not true, right?
I always kind of took an urban legend as like an old wives' tale.
Maybe I'm wrong. I always thought that, like, I don't know if it's true or not. It's an urban legend.
Like, is the Jersey Devil real? You know,
I'm from New Jersey, and I can tell you.
Yeah, I mean,
Jersey Devil's real. No.
Urban legend is basically a modern word for folklore.
Right, right.
That's how I feel.
I got you. So
Walt is not underneath pirates.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Adam, do you have any favorite parts of this area?
Yeah, and like you'll have to forgive me a little bit because I haven't had like the luxury of being conveniently located to Disneyland, so I haven't gone on it as much as say you guys. But I do recall there was a chess game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I like the chess game.
That's cool.
There's so many like little stories that could be, that you know, just in that scene as well, that could be unfolded. like if they're gonna do like a comic series, like the backstory on it all on each skeleton could be an issue, you know, like just in there.
right.
So as we
that would go, actually be really cool.
I just came up with it. What do you think?
I like it. Sold.
All right. I'm available, Disney. So.
Hey.
As we move forward, we talk about the little mist screen here, where Davy Jones is. This thing is always kind of weird to me. Like, it's cool, but it's also.
Let's talk about it.
I could do without it. I don't know. What do you guys
why think? Why could you do without it? Tell us that first.
It's just so jarring. like where it is. I feel like it works a little bit better in Walt Disney World because you're in the cavern area where there could be water falling on you.
Right.
But you just went through the treasure room, and you're about to go to the main scene. So, you know, why is that? Why is water right there? It's supposed to be emulating a waterfall, the mist. And also, why is this ghostly Davy Jones talking to me right there? Like, it's a bit jarring. I think it's cool, like, just in general. I'm not, like, against it. I don't hate it. I like Davy Jones. I didn't like when they had Blackbeard in there so much, just because I didn't really like Blackbeard as a character.
Right. Davy Jones is definitely way creepier.
Yeah.
He's kind of weird though. Like the effect is cool, but he's kind of weird because he is a little bit out of sorts with the rest of the ride. Because basically, we have some established rules. We have like dead skeletons, and then we have live pirates. Johnny Depp fits in well because he's a live pirate,
right?
But then we have this one short interlude of like weird kind of fish man,
and this is one of those attempts to stab in the IP that could be construed as tacky,
right?
For sure. But my thing with it is I'll cite work because I do stuff like this. It is the projection mapping is fairly simple for could have done, and the projection isn't really that bright normally, and it seems like a lot of the times, or I'm just a lucky ducky, it's not working. I've gone through it several times where it's not working.
But the audio still goes, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so when that's happening, it's just like because you start thinking about it. But I think when it's working, it's a cool effect. I do like Davy Jones. I love Lovecraft, and I think that Davy Jones is derivative. His design was derivative of Lovecraftian kind of stuff. So I think he's creepy. I think he fits, but I do think it's one of those attempts to weasel in the IP that could have been done better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have just done without. I mean, the ride could have done without Davy Jones. I mean, I don't know where else Davy Jones would have fit better.
maybe he could be standing behind the barrels that we're going to get to later.
Maybe if he was like the last thing you encountered before you left the ride, like that was like the kind of final confrontation, and through and past him, you go back to the world you know. That might have worked better.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where he fits either. But I think that particular piece has always stuck out to me too. Is kind of like, meh. Mm.
Right, I'll take it. I don't hate it, but I'm just kind of like, it's just.
That's what I'm saying. It's like meh.
Yeah, it's meh. Yeah. But what's not meh is right after that. This is the jaw-dropping moment we all had. Which is entering this big room. It's not, I say room because we know it's a room, but sorry, this big space where two pirate ships are throwing cannons at each other between you. I mean, if you didn't think that you were in jeopardy as a child, then they failed at their job, because that was just like, what?
Yeah, it worked on me, and it worked on my daughter. My daughter was very young the first time she went through it, and I'll never forget that she, I mean, dude, she legit thought it was real. I don't have the tactile memory of what I experienced there. I just remember being like, wow. But seeing her, she was like, what? You know, like the cannonball, she'd go down, you know, like duck, her head would go down. You know? Just like, it was, yeah, very real. And I think a lot of it has to do with how open and expansive it is, because you're in a bit of tight quarters before you go into it. And as you come out, it's big.
Yeah.
As far as like, it's kind of, it's the wide shot, right? You know, like,
right.
Everything's been close ups and then, but
bam.
He's like, but you have no context of where you are until that point. Right.
You're in the jungle, baby.
You're on a jet.
That's really sensory overload.
It really is. And I think that it's one of those things that, you know, it's not to scale, obviously, but it's close, man. It's like, you know, half scale, or I mean, it's a big old ship, you know. So you really get that sense of overwhelming size and proportion. And and I also think that the ceiling in there, the clouds, just kind of all that stuff, that it's very faux reality. It's done very well.
Yeah, it kind of messes with your mind too, because it's all these things that your mind is trying to process of like, this is similar enough that I think it's real, but it's different, you know, as a child, maybe as an adult too, I don't know, but you know, like, and the clouds are always moving. And that was one thing I was thought about today as well, was that if they had just made static clouds, that would have taken you out of it so fast.
there was some application for those clouds. I think it was at World's Fair or something. And those came with the attraction, but yeah, those are really that's a cool effect. Like, that's way ahead of its time.
Yeah,
it's really cool. And I agree. If they would have just had like, you know, cotton balls, you know, a lot of those fake clouds you see are just like cotton balls with like a silicone wrap, and they'll put like lights inside of them to look like thunder and things like that. Like you probably see that stuff now. If they'd have done something corny or cheese ball like that, it would have killed it. But what they did made it feel real.
Yeah, because you're not. That's the thing. Because you're not really focused on the clouds. You're like, it's just, it's
in, no.
You're it's in your subconscious. Like you're.
Yeah. You absolutely. Yeah. It's part of the environment.
I wonder what which Disney ride has like the largest singular scene.
Wouldn't that be it?
It's got to be that, right? Yeah.
Well, the only one that like, immediately jumps to mind is maybe like the initial temple entry in Indiana.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. But that's those pretty... are the only two that jump to mind.
Yeah. I don't know that. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's close.
What do you mean by like the size of the room or the amount of work of things going on in the room?
Well, I guess kind of a combination of both, like just sheer size.
And when you say square footage, like that scene when you kind of get into Indy and it's just the big, huge expanse of a room,
yeah,
that's probably bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, that's got to be. But it's not the same. It doesn't have that. I don't know.
Indy has more of a singular focal point where there's just like one thing you're supposed to be paying attention to while there's just like a litany of stuff going on.
You're traveling so quickly through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that
and
too.
And I think that's the value of Pirates, especially in that scene, is you really get the time to soak it in. You know,
right.
You get the time to look around and see what's going on and feel, you know, the tension of the scene.
So what's interesting now is, you know, now that in the post Johnny Depp era is right away you hear them talking about Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
And I feel like every other word out of their mouth heard that like right away. That could be one of those things that's argued that maybe a little bit too much. I don't remember or know what they said before that, or maybe they weren't even speaking at all. I have no memory of that.
Oh, they were speaking. It was like it was just war talk,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It was different, but it was like war talk. I don't remember what they said, but yeah.
So, like, fire the cannons.
Right, right. Yeah. Fire the cannons!
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's interesting is, you know, so we start turning the corner, and right before we get the reveal of the village, what's there right now is you see shadows of two pirates fighting.
Hmm.
Yep, and that projection mapping effect is far superior to the Davy Jones effect. And you can literally tell that, like, the level of budget that went into that just dwarfs the other one, just from a technical perspective. But the effect itself, it's again comes back to scale and proportion. Where are those people fighting? That's what I find wondering when I see that. I'm like, because the landing that they would be fighting on, you would obviously, like, the size of the shadow in proportion to the landing that they were fighting on, they would be, like, chest level above that landing. And you don't see anybody there. So it always, ever since they put that in, I've been like, meh. But it's cool though.
Well, but I didn't think about the where are they. What I was thinking about was that it is so technically advanced that it doesn't
fit the ride.
It doesn't fit the ride at all. I'm like, no, yeah. None of those animatronics are moving like that.
Well, and it is. They're very fluid motions too. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very articulate. But that's kind of the thing. Like, you know, can you go back in time and recreate that audio animatronic feel that, you know, they had back then? Yeah, you could. But it'd be a bit like going to the store, the cell phone store, and saying, "Could I get a Nokia 5190?
Right.
I want to play. Right. I want to play Snake really bad. I might have just dated myself there to our audience, but I think that it's an equivalent, you know, situation. So they got to use what they got, you know.
I mean, that's true. I mean, I don't remember what was there or why, you know. Maybe
it was. I don't think it was anything.
Yeah,
I don't think it was anything. But I remember the first time I saw that, I was just like, "Hold on, where are those guys at?" Like, and I did think about the realism, but I can almost bite off on that. It's just like, yeah, the people should be there anyway.
Oh well, whatever. We don't. I just wanted to point that out. I was like, I don't have too many other criticisms from this point on of changes. So yeah, now we're at our you know, the main village scene here,
mm-hmm.
And this is clearly the meat of the sandwich of the pirates' experience, because there's so much going on.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know, and it's also, this has become, not has become, but it always has been. Well, I'm not sure. But I think at this point, it's the ride is very passive. None of these, they never acknowledge that you're there. And they were kind of doing that before, you know, like you know, with the talking skull.
That's interesting. You know? No. That's really interesting. I've never really thought of that. It shifts right there, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I kind of wish that it didn't. I don't, you know, that's because we're in tight quarters with all this stuff going on, and at no point are we acknowledged as being there. You know, I don't know how that would have worked if the ride would have had the same feeling, if we didn't feel like we were peeking in on what's going on, or if we were acknowledged.
Yeah, it becomes a more voyeuristic experience. Like, and you're not as an active participant as much. I don't know, but maybe there's a little reprieve from kind of like the intensity of the last scene there. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to why, you know, the music and all of that at what seems like a funky time. It could be that there's just peaks and valleys, and that's a valley.
That's true. But you would think maybe not the tension's all on the rider, but just some sort of acknowledgement that a boat full of people are passing by. There's so much dialogue going on there on the ride that maybe one of them would notice, right?
Yeah. How about you? How much will you give for her? Yeah. I mean, I think anything could have worked there. Yeah, for sure.
but the other thing about is why it has so much rewritability is that there's I can't believe there's so much dialogue that you could hear different things every time you ride. There's just right. so much going on.
Yeah, it's insane. And I do think, since we've brought it up several times, Sparrow in that scene, I think that's where he works.
Yeah.
In the barrels and stuff. And, you know, there's another one, what's he, like, hiding behind something.
Yeah, probably a barrel.
As I recall, it feels like Sparrow might give you some attention. If it may be, I might make the argument, it feels like you're kind of in on a secret with Jack Sparrow. Especially because I recall...
You think he's winking at you?
Because especially, doesn't he basically address you directly when you finally encounter him in, like, the treasure room?
Oh, at the end of the ride. Yeah,
he does. So then you're in Sparrow's trip.
That would make sense.
Cool. Yeah, so, I mean, there you go. Well played. And I think that scene is where he works. And, you know, now Sparrow and the Auctioneer are what stick out there.
Mm-hmm. So now that's a whole different experience. And now it's like I was saying, maybe he's like kind of winking at you, like,
yeah, again, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, don't give me up.
Right, exactly. Right. That's exactly kind of the impression. I
know
get.
That you could see me and you hear all these people asking about me.
nothing to see here.
Right. You know, so that's this is interesting. Man, we're getting deep on this. I love it. and maybe that was an intentional plus when they added him in the ride. Maybe they had these conversations and we're like, we're not gonna have Sparrow be a passive character, not passive, or, you know, passive to us, as it were.
Yeah, right. No, that's a fair term.
I would go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's cool.
Yeah, I would hope maybe that if, you know, if the Imagineers were forced to jam like new IP into something like they did with Pirates, that they at least got a chance to do something interesting with it.
You would hope. But you never know. Again, I'm not discrediting the Imagineers. I mean, clearly they do great things. They have great ideas. They're fans. Because while, you know, I don't think there's too many Imagineers that aren't Disney fans, you know, from youth, you know, that are making those type of decisions. But we've seen some bad things go down, you know, so anything's possible. Is there anything that sticks out as your favorite from this whole sequence before the fire?
You know, I think it just sets that, like, just kind of, again, it does just kind of, if it has that passive feel, like you're watching, you know, it's kind of a dead space almost, it feels like.
What do you mean by that?
Not a ton of action.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we just went through several creepy drops and cannons.
Yeah. So you're getting that little breath.
I feel bad for that poor town mayor.
Oh, the mayor that's getting is that the mayor dunked in the water? Yeah.
I think he's supposed to be the mayor of like the city that's under siege.
Oh, and his wife berating him. He's having a bad day.
Yeah. He is not having a good time.
What's interesting, it's like, yeah, it's a dead space, but I kind of feel like that's the ride. Like that's where it started, and everything just built out from it.
Yeah. Again, in peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
It feels like at the beginning of the ride, there's so much tension that once you actually get to the pirates, it's like kind of an extended victory lap.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But not for long. Because as you make that corner and you pass the singing donkey, one of my favorite characters, doesn't get
That's
enough
awesome.
Love. Always love when I'm on his side. And actually, one thing I do want to point out that I was really taking in today is the speaker placement of all the people talking, because they're I was looking for the speakers and you just can't see them at all, and the sounds are really sound like they're coming from the animatronics. And
yeah, I wonder where they are placed.
But the decision to do that, I'd imagine that it's always been that way. You know, I don't know if that's something I picked up on as a child, if they were or weren't.
Yeah, me neither.
But that adds to the subconscious intensely. So even that stays as an adult with all the rewrites, is the audio is coming from where the animatronic is. You know, like, it's like that person is talking right now, and he's talking to that person on the other side of me, and I'm hearing it, you know, like, it had to be doing that from the beginning, because if it didn't, I feel like that would have been such a failure. But I don't really know of any other attraction where it really does that. Or, I don't think
there's another one where there's as many characters to do that with.
Right. I mean, I'm sure other attractions do it. Like, again, Run comes to mind. Radiator Springs Racers definitely does that in the dark ride scenes. you hear the cars, not people. They're cars, James, not people. You hear cars talking all around you, but it's a subtle thing that I really appreciate. And it makes me think that donkey's real, because it sounds like that donkey's making noise. But anyways, we turn that corner into the Flaming City, which the fire looks so realistic when it opened that the local fire department wanted to shut him down or something like that. I don't remember some story. I don't know if they wanted to shut him down.
It's the one thing I've always taken from that is that it's an interesting composition for rigging, the way they rigged all of the wood in there to create the look of a collapsed, you know, frame.
Yeah.
It's pretty spectacular. I mean, that piece of it really does stick out. The fire's very, very, very realistic. But I think what gives it that pitch of like, oh man, this is real, is definitely also the rigging of those timbers. It's pretty cool. When you look up at it, you can kind of see like, oh wow, they put like a lot of thought into how something would look as it is collapsing. And that would pretty much be it.
Wow, that's true. I mean, and as we keep moving forward, we'll see a little bit more of that in play in a spectacular way. But the only thing that would make this more realistic if you could feel if they had heat going.
Oh yeah,
that's one thing that's absent from that, is that you don't feel the warmth, unlike Mr. Toad's when you go to.
Right.
Yeah. But
that's actually that's a good plus.
Yeah, they could add a little heat there. But you know, I think this tonally, this brings you even though they're still singing Yo-Ho at this point, it's actually a very interesting thing, as you know, there's pirates cheerfully singing a happy song as death and destruction looms all around them. I like that contrast. this is the last big open show scene as we go back into the close-ups here, back into the tight shots, and we pass the jail, which this is the first time in a while you've seen some more dead bodies, skeletons, if you were. Which I always think whenever there's skeletons locked up in dungeons on Disney attractions, that people really take that very lightly. And they don't take the reality of the fact that, oh, that's a dead person. That's not like a Halloween decoration. You know, like that person died, decomposed, all by hanging on this wall.
And now they get to live at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like basically welcome to like everything Disney, and thus the existence of Creepy Kingdom.
Yep,
no doubt.
For sure.
There are pretty much horrific implications with pretty much anything Disney makes, if you look
If you want to really look at what's going on.
Yeah. You mean the world's a creepy place?
Yes.
Well, the world is, but you know they you know. But so is yeah, it's so just, is so is Disneyland though.
It's just now, part almost, of the just part of the world, dude.
Almost in the jail, I have to give a shout out to what I think is one of the more iconic images from Pirates of the Caribbean. And I pray that I'm not misspeaking here, but it's also the scene that we've got like the people in jail trying to get the keys from the dog, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yep. That's definitely iconic.
Yeah, absolutely.
They so iconic they recreated it in
right
first, did yes
it's funny because I was the whole thing about especially in like Tom and Jerry cartoons or whatever that like dogs love like just like empty bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's just funny. I always think about that. I was like, I think the dog's like bones with meat on it. They just want just...
They just like bones, dude.
They just want bones.
Yeah, they'll chew them up.
Well, that's... Well, yeah. I always think of that, though. I don't know. Maybe my dogs just wanted meat on their bones. But,
well, I think they'd prefer meat on the bone. In a perfect world,
right. They'll take what they can get, but this, oh, not, I don't know. That dog wasn't buying it though, right? Because the dog, he's not giving up the keys.
He's like, nah.
Put some meat on that bone, I might toss the keys over to you. But I don't know. But I, you know, obviously it's iconic, and it's kind of like it's very playful in the way that the ride was earlier. And I believe that this is the last thing you see in the Walt Disney World version before Jack Sparrow.
And this is kind of creepy when you think about it, because so they're trying to tempt him with a bone. Chances are, like, they're in jail. They're not being fed anything, like, fancy enough to have a bone. So, like, the only other conclusion you can reach is that, like, they're offering up a piece of one of their former compatriots.
I never thought about that before. Like, where do they get a bone from? Oh, boy.
Because I don't think they're going to be getting, like, a big hunk of mutton if they're in, like, jail.
No. It's one of those hanging dead bodies.
Brutal.
Wow. I mean, what? Hey, the writing's on the wall there, man. I mean, where did they get a bone from? But like I was saying, in the Walt Disney World version, I believe shortly after that, scene, yeah, you see Jack Sparrow and yay, yeah, we're all happy. But in the Disneyland version, I kind of feel like it's a bait and switch a little bit, because it's like, oh, that, you know, that's kind of playful. But then you enter this incredible set that looks like a pirate, like a building is collapsing and just things are going to fall on you any second. It is mesmerizing. You often get stuck there because there's like a delay of the of the boats getting up the hill. And it's just like, that is an incredible scene.
Yeah, and due to lack of sleep, this is what I was talking about earlier. I was ahead of us. The rigging there is what oh, does it. Yeah, that whole look is insane.
Yeah. I was just like, so we love that. And then... Remember the beginning of the ride when cannons were coming at you and they were barely missing you? We're going to have barrels hanging over you and one person holding it by rope, and then we're going to have two people shooting guns between you at close range. That is an awesome way to end the ride.
Right.
You're like, oh, you didn't get off that easy with the cute little dog seat. And you often get stuck there as well.
Yeah, you do.
So I love that. And then we gotta, yeah, we visit Captain Jack's treasure room, which
is fun.
It's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice. I kind of wish the ride would still ended on that you almost got shot note. But. It's, you know, you got to have it.
And Johnny Depp's so handsome. I mean,
yeah, there's that.
It just works well.
I would like to know how he got there from the last time you see him. He was hiding in a barrel.
He rolled.
Oh, okay.
We're going to need you to suspend disbelief for this next 2 minutes.
I can't. I'm sorry. This is
the... I'm going to say like 2.5 hours worth of convoluted movie plot.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, film
involving a fight in like a big like windmill or whatever that thing was.
Oh, yeah. But he was on the... Yeah. So pretty much it was like, you know... Meanwhile, at the ranch, you know, this was going on, you know, there's like a whole other story going on, and then you just caught back up with him. So he made it. I'm proud of him. What's interesting, though, is as you're going up the hill, of course, that's absent from the Walt Disney World version because there's no hill. In one of the corners, there's a whole bunch of light up eyes, like these creepy things looking at you. And it doesn't really make any sense, but I love it.
Where is this?
When you're going up the hill,
I
think it's on the left side, and one of the corners of darkness, there's like a cartoon eyes, you know, but they're lighting up.
I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Yeah, it's pretty subtle. It's just kind of in the corners, and it's kind of similar to in Haunted Mansion in Walt Disney World, how the wallpaper does that at one point, where right. You see the eyes first and then you see that it's the wallpaper. It's a similar, but it doesn't, you don't see anything else. There's just like creepy little eyes over there just looking at you. So I don't know how long those have been there. That might have been part of the Johnny Depp plussing, because it seems like a more recent type of technology.
And, look for that.
And then there's also a mysterious voice talking to you as you're going up the hill. I believe it's Barbossa.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's kind of creepy, actually, because it was like, I guess dead men do tell tales.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, what does that mean? I actually thought that today. I was like, who's dead that told a tale here today? I don't know.
I guess I think that's like the narrative of the ride, you know, is like you're journeying through, you know, dead pirates, and you're getting a story.
Oh, so like
the ride is a story.
So
everything tells a story.
So I guess what's really happening, which especially the fact that this is where it is in Disneyland, I think that we have time traveled. Is that the thought process here, that we've...
Not so much for me. I go back more to like what guys like Crump say, you know, where it's like everything Walt did told a story, and all these rides tell stories. And so the in essence, the dead men told tales, you know, because you just went through their story. That's what I take from that.
Okay. But I mean, since it's Barbossa, that clearly wasn't there the whole time, right?
No.
I don't know if there was another voice over there.
I don't remember what the other voice ever said. I always remember the parrot.
Right, and the parrot. I think that as far as the way that the queue set up, that's like the first thing you see when you enter the building. And then you get to spend time with it waiting off the ride. I think that's a very clever way they set that up.
Absolutely. It's like an infinity loop. It's beginning and end. Mm-hmm. Splash Mountain does the same thing. But, you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about was with the queue was, as you're walking up, there's the door that's on the wall. It's like an exit door, probably like an emergency exit door. Mm-hmm. And if you bang on it, people bang back on it. Right. I had a really cool moment there with a kid that had never been to Disneyland before that was in front of us in line. And I was like, if you knock on that door, a pirate will knock back. And he's like, no, it won't. And I was like, I was like, do it. And he did it. And then somebody knocked back and he jumped, you know. That's pretty funny.
Gotcha. Well, that's Pirates 50th. It's still here. Well, it's still going.
You got to exit through the gift shop, though.
You actually don't.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You actually and Walt Disney World, you certainly can. There's no way getting out of that ride without going through that massive gift shop.
Yeah.
Did you know that at the gift shop in Walt Disney World, there's actually some pirate movie props hidden in the shop?
No.
No. Do yep. tell.
Mm-hmm. At very least, I remember there. I think one of the cursed coins, is embedded into the wall. I think there might have been something else.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I forget the name of the store, the shop. I mean, you don't have to go through it, but it's right after you get back into the alleyway. That's basically the pirate store. It's very tiny, especially compared to the Magic
Kingdom. Oh yeah.
But it definitely, I don't think there's any movie props in there, but it definitely has a really cool lived-in feel to it.
Yeah, I love that little part. I guess I always exit through that gift shop. I mean, yeah, you don't have to, but I love just that whole little corner of New Orleans Square is pretty sweet.
So, that was it. We've included Pirates 50th. I do want to say they have a few offerings in celebration of Pirates, some food items, one of which is a golden churro. And I had this today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sparkly.
How was it?
It's visually, you know, it actually is sparkly. It looks like there's glitter on there, which is just a little concerning. But it tastes like Fruit Loops.
It's
a churro that tastes like Fruit Loops.
Also, kids, whatever you do, do not go on Urban Dictionary and look up golden churro.
Wow. Yeah, no.
Doing it.
On that note, we are out of here. If you guys want to give some plugs of where to find you online, now's the time. Ryan doesn't want to be found.
You.
No. Adam, where can people find you online?
I do a podcast for a video game website. It's middleofnowheregaming.com. You could check it out or not. It's cool.
Right.
Whatever. this is my first time chatting with you, but if this experience is anything like your podcast, go listen to it, people.
Yeah, I try to be entertaining.
Adam is a professional. If you would like to contact us here at the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, you can do so by sending us an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, links to all of our social media, to sign up for our mailing list, and to check out our videos and articles, just go to creepykingdom.com. And while you're surfing the web, be sure to check out foolishmortalsdoc.com. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy. I have a girl now. It is Mimi. I like it. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha